This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 316 of the Countdown Podcast, where one of our asses got married. My name is Wayne.
And my name is the ass that got married.
That's right, boy.
Or Paul, if you prefer. Welcome to the podcast for Countdown Movies, sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. And
he's off the market, folks. He's off the market.
Officially, as you're hearing this, correct, I'm off the market, assuming it all went well, because behind the curtains.
We're recording before. So we don't know how it went.
I don't know how Wayne's speech went.
I don't know how my speech went. That's right.
I don't know whether my bride left me at the altar.
Mm.
In which case, it'd be a very different
Julia Roberts
recording next
week.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, this is ostensibly happening after the marriage. And I'm on honeymoon as this one drops.
Right.
So there we go. And today, Wayne, what are we doing to celebrate that fact?
It's the top 10, last 10, yo. What edition, Paul?
Paul is married edition.
Paul is married
because we need to have some kind of.
Paulie got hitched, no? Paul is married edition.
That works.
We'll come over some. Okay, good. They'll play.
Paulie got hitched. Whatever you want. That means that much to you. We just have to delineate, because if we keep putting top 10 last and nothing else, apparently iTunes craps itself.
Okay, Paulie got hitched edition. How about that?
All right.
Oh, we can do married if you like.
Whatever.
We'll figure it out.
Well, it doesn't matter. It's fine. So basically, if you've not heard this one before, it's a semi-regular. Once every 3 to 4 months, we do this topic where we review 10 films that we haven't spoken about on the show before.
Random.
From worst to best.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing linking them other than the fact that we have watched them of late.
That's right.
And basically, we start off tearing things to shreds and end up hopefully talking good things about we've watched.
Worst to best.
And we'll nominate that point where we pass over from do not touch with a 10-foot pole
to I recommend.
Exactly.
Nice.
Right. Simple as that, right? Makes sense.
Right. Good.
Let's carry on then. No recount today. Why? Because we haven't even released the last episode
yet. It's been mere moments since our last recording.
So we have to do that, double up of that in episode 317. But for now then, let's get straight into it. On the other side of this message regarding live stream for a cure, which is coming up in just a few short weeks, where you can donate to the fight against cancer as organized by Nicholas Haskins, the yearly event that he runs along with some of his compadres, Gerald from Two Peas on a Podcast and Dan from Netflix and Swill. And I'll be a guest again in the upcoming lineup. We'll let you know when that's going to be. So enjoy this message from those boys, and then we'll be back with the topic after that.
My name is Nicholas Haskins, and I'd like a moment of your time to tell you about the 5th annual live stream for The Cure. To do that, I brought along two people whom I couldn't do this event without, Gerald Morris and Dan Brennick.
Over the past 4 years, the live stream for The Cure has raised over $30,000 for the Cancer Research Institute.
That contribution is helping to fund research into cancer immunotherapy, training the body's immune system to fight all forms of cancer.
This year, we're aiming for our biggest goal yet as we try to raise $15,000 in 50 hours on the air.
Tune in May 19th through the 23rd as we're joined live by podcasters and content creators from around the world.
With your help, we can continue the fight for a future immune to cancer.
Together, we can make a difference.
The top 10 last 10, Paulie's hitched edition.
Paulie got hitched edition.
It's the subject of this week's countdown as we come out of that somber moment into something far less somber. All right, Wayne, what have you watched first of all? How good is your list? How bad is your list this week as a general?
It's eclectic. Okay, it's okay. Eclectic. My number one's gonna. You're gonna call me an art house wanker.
Oh well. Okay. There's no chance of that with my number one. I will say I have three absolute shit stains, one really disappointing film, and then six recommended films.
Okay. I think mine turns before the number five mark as well.
Okay.
So here we
cool.
go.
All right. Lead us away.
Okay. My number 10 is a film that has just been dropped on Netflix, and it's just as bad as you think. It's called Thunder Force.
Oh, no.
Oh,
you didn't.
My God. Sometimes with this show, you have to aim for the shit one, right?
You do.
And I had no idea.
For the team.
Dude.
You didn't know?
I assumed it would be shit.
I looked at this trailer and just went, fuck off.
Oh, you looked at the trailer? I looked at the title card and said, this is going to be shit.
I'm not watching another film directed by Melissa McCarthy's husband, starring her.
I didn't know that till halfway through.
Off. Super intelligence, but never again.
Oh my God, people, this film, yes, Melissa McCarthy and Octavia Spencer, right, an Academy Award winning actress, somehow obviously wanted to buy a house or something. I don't know what's going on here, all right? But in this film, the idea here is that somehow, for some reason, something happened and all of the people on Earth who are psychotic got superpowers. All right, or rather, not all of them that got superpowers, but you get superpowers, but only psychotic people got it. It's some genetic shift. Yeah. So in the world terrorized by supervillains who are psychotic, there's this one woman who's developed a process to give superpowers to regular people, Octavia Spencer, but she accidentally imbues her estranged best friend, Melissa McCarthy, with incredible abilities. And the two women, one of them is super strong, the other one can turn invisible, which is a shit superpower. All right. They must become the first superhero team, and now it's up to these people who call themselves Thunder Force to battle the superpowered miscreants and save Chicago from the clutches of a bad guy called The King, who's played by the other gay guy in Will and Grace. His name is... Bobby Cannavale.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
which makes sense, because...
No.
He was in Super Intelligence as well.
Really? Okay, apparently someone's bringing up the old band, which is a mistake because this movie blows. It's about as shit as you would expect. Melissa McCarthy, I don't care what you say, she's intermittently funny at best, okay?
I don't think she's even intermittently funny.
Bridesmaids, yeah. I'll give her that. That was a good role. Yeah, that was good, okay? It is just full of painful dialogue. There's one scene where she's trying to tell people who Urkel is and Nell and stuff like that, and it just goes on. It may only go on for, like, say, 10 or 11 lines, but it's too long. And it is so shit. And the chemistry between the two adult versions of the lead is probably workable, I would say. And to be honest with you, the first act shows them as kids, and that's actually not terrible, okay? The rest of it is just balls. Jason Bateman is in it, and he is occasionally somewhat amusing. He's probably the best thing about it.
Is Jason Bateman perchance?
Playing Jason Bateman?
Yes.
No, because he plays a character who's actually a baddie who got imbued with superpowers, but his superpowers is that his hands are just claws like a crab. That's it. And so he actually does quite a bit with that, though he actually is quite funny. But again, that's compared to the rest of this thing. It's like, story-wise, there's not even a proper way of analyzing such a shit screenplay. One moment it seems to be taking it seriously. A couple of minutes later, everything's back to annoyingly dumb shit. Mm. And I don't even want to keep going. Ben Falcone is in it, the director.
Yeah, of course he is.
Of course. And they should just start. I don't know why people keep giving him this thing. It is so bad, man. It's like the worst thing ever.
Super Intelligence was a huge flop. So if this one flops as well, maybe we won't have to deal with too much more.
They gave him a 3-picture deal. Yeah, I'm sure something else is turning up in the shit wheel. Anyway. don't watch Thunder Force.
I won't.
Not that you would have.
I shan't.
But just so you know, it's as bad as you think it is, possibly worse.
Okay. Right. Well, I see you, Thunder Force.
Okay.
And I raise you one of the worst films that Bruce Willis has ever starred in.
Oh, God. This could be anything.
It's called Cosmic Sin.
Wow. It's called Cosmic Sin. I've never heard of it, but I'm about to. Bring it.
Actually went to the cinemas here in Australia in a very brief run. That's how desperate we were for content.
We didn't hear shit about this.
Or 5 or 6 weeks ago.
Cosmic Sin.
Yeah, it is.
What's it about?
Oh, okay, well, it's basically an alien invasion movie.
Sure.
Where he's some kind of, not even a decorated war veteran, he's a guy that dropped this kind of nuke bomb on the opposing force and killed hundreds of thousands of people and considers himself a fucking hero as a result of it, whereas half the population hates him and half like him.
So he dropped a bomb on to kill the aliens but killed...
No. This is back in a civil war of some description.
Oh,
yeah.
And wow.
Killed bunches of humans and then like basically sits around smugly going, I did what I had to do.
Okay.
You know, that
okay.
Kind of,
all yeah. right. Okay. We're seeing the Bruce Willis.
Surprisingly enough, not really hard for Bruce Willis to act smug these days.
Mm. Yeah.
It's got Frank Grillo in it as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Frank Grillo and Bruce. Frank Grillo is the kind of leader of this strike force of mercenaries who, kind of decked out in like this sort of mech suits, are going to infiltrate this alien planet and somehow destroy them at their source by dropping this nuke, whatever thing it is, right?
Mm, yeah.
Meanwhile, the aliens get into Earth in the early scene and they kind of run around like possess people like zombies and these zombies run at people.
Oh, my God.
And then they shoot them down in some of the worst choreographed fucking action.
That's what I was about to ask you. How expensive is this film, Paul?
Yeah, it looks like it's made on about $74.
$74?
After you take out Bruce's paycheck.
Yep. I was just going to say, everything goes there.
Directed by a guy named Edward Drake, who I should have realized. There's this random fucking dude who doesn't look like a soldier, who's meant to be the comic relief and cracking jokes left, right, and center, and somehow survives all the way to the end of the film.
Let me guess, that's him?
He's the director. Uh-huh. He's also, I'm pretty sure, the writer.
How do these things get made, man? How do they get made, and then they attract Bruce Willis? Is it because some studio had enough money to pay him that week?
I apologize. Not the director. The writer was in the film. I apologize. So the director is just his own idiotic person. This is the writer. Corey Large is his name.
Okay.
And he's terrible. And then like Costas Mandylor's in here.
What?
Yeah. And Ari's wife from
Entourage.
From Entourage is in here as well. She's as awesome. Bruce Willis's kind of love interest.
Okay. She's still hot.
Yeah. I mean, sure.
I love her. Yeah. Yeah. But that's not enough to make me watch this film.
It literally disposes of half the cast when they're trying to. They're in this. They don't even get in a ship. They just fly in their suits through the alien alien armada. Really? Yeah,
they fly in suits. Do they look good?
No.
Of course they look good. I'm just trying to imagine a world where a Bruce Willis movie. Oh man, Frank Grillo. What's it like to be Frank Grillo?
Because what I said, Frank Grillo is either the worst agent in the world or the best agent.
No,
in the
here's
world.
What it is, Frank Grillo. Right? It's like if I was him, I'd be tired of working out for these shitty films. Like he did, like you know, Captain America, Winter Soldier,
Boss Level recently.
Boss Level was good, right?
And Boss Level was great.
Yeah, and maybe the agent's like, yeah, I got you one good
he
one.
He pops up in this and fucking.
But you have to do
jiu-jitsu
two other
or whatever it was called.
My God. Yeah, I remember now.
It's astounding.
Big piece of shit. Would you give me a score out of 10, please?
A generous 11. Out of 100.
11. So it's like a 1. All right.
This is definitely the worst 10 films of the year, unquestionably. It sucked out my will to be angry. It's that bad.
My God. Why is Bruce Willis bothering anyway?
I don't know. I do not know. Wow. There you go. That's my number 10.
Cool. My number 9. Folks, when you do a podcast like this, if occasionally in your research, you come across old movies you never heard about, but they sound interesting. And this one did sound interesting. It's called The Spanish Prisoner. All right. I know. You've never heard of it. And neither
Maybe I have. Who's in it?
Campbell Scott and Steve Martin in a serious role. More importantly, it is directed by David Mamet.
Right.
So you think to yourself, wow, that's interesting. I love me some Steve Martin. Campbell Scott was in Singles. I'll watch this. Okay. And
Glengarry Ross.
So that's the whole thing.
Now, that would be a lot funny had I even got it out properly.
Well, I didn't know this until I started watching. But first of all, this movie is set, it was made in the early 90s, right? That's a red flag for me because I can't stand people's suits. All right? People's suits were huge in the 90s. I had one myself. It's a picture of me in draped in material. Campbell Scott's this dude, like he's like a sort of economist or something. He's developed a process that will make his company a fortune. It will also make whoever has it a fortune, so the details are kept secure and everything. And he meets like this seemingly millionaire dude named Jimmy Dales, played by Steve Martin, who's in a serious role, and they start to give him advice on the matter. Now, it is one of those trickster movies. It's one of those
con artist
type movies, right? But you don't know till the very end, and it tries to pull some shit on you. It is a ho-hum bullshit 90s film. The David Mamet-ness just nothing. As far as I'm concerned, anyone could have filmed this thing.
Right.
It is crap. You could tell that this is one of his early films where he's trying to be clever and do this Robert Altman thing where there's a poster on the wall that has something to do with the plot and that scene. He's trying to do that, but it's way too obvious. And Campbell Scott plays the stupidest genius I've ever seen. He does things like, you know, he finds a dead body in a room and immediately goes to grab the knife that's stuck in the body and then walks away. I'm like, your fingerprints are on those knives. Oh, it's shit like that, okay? It does get sort of twisty-turny towards the end, and there's a little bit of, like, it's not that bad there, but it's still quite crap. Does not stand any test of time and has monstrously large plot holes. The Spanish Prisoner is absolutely jail for your entertainment. It's just done.
I reckon I might have watched this 25 years ago.
Dude, the title refers to a particular long con called The Spanish Prisoner, which is what they pull on Campbell Scott. All right, but it's got like layers and layers and layers, but it just doesn't work.
All right, and a score/star rating.
Oh, shit. I wanted to turn it off halfway through, so fuck. Okay, I'll give it one of your 1 out of 10s.
There you go. All right, well, I'll go as high as maybe what, not 1.5, sorry, but 1 star. I'll go as high as 20-ish.
Okay, so 2 stars, yeah?
No, the 20 out of, what's 1 star out of 5.
Oh, it is 1 star, yeah, you're right.
Tom and Jerry.
Oh, my God. I take it you saw this with your daughter?
I did. We were, and speaking of turning off, we turned off halfway through, ostensibly because she was going to bed, but mainly because I was like, I've had enough. We need to have a break. I can't watch any more of this shit.
Now, this is interesting to me because I was a fan of the Tom and Jerry whence I was a youngster. Except, I did. There was actually this odd moment where they tried to make them talk in one or two episodes.
Yeah, go on. Right.
And it was weird. It's really meant to be played like,
well, they don't talk in this film, but Tom does sing, which straight away.
I have seen that before.
The fuck?
Oh, really?
Everything else about this film was hilarious, I would have let that slide, but that just really, really rang annoying to me. So he can get up there and he can sing and he can dance, literally sing. And everyone's applauding and whatever else. And I'm like, okay, but now you can't talk and don't talk the rest of the film. Fucking dumb.
You know what? That would work if the movie was good, but it wasn't good and it pissed you off. That's what happened here. So is it just boring? If it's not entertaining your daughter, the target market, it's got itself some problems.
She said she liked it, but she's not watched it again.
Yeah.
So my daughter's already at the age, having just turned 8, where she recognizes what dad thinks and wants to do the opposite.
Ah.
So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If she can sense I'm not liking something, she's like, oh, no, it's all right.
Really? Where'd she learn that?
I don't know.
Is she you?
And she refuses to. She refuses to, like, initially she refused to watch the MCU films until we browbeat her into it. Then she was like, fine, they're good. You know, that
oh,
kind of
really?
Yeah.
That's quite interesting.
Whereas this is directed by Tim Story and it's so bland and boring. I mean, he did Shaft and Fantastic Four, the older Fantastic Four films, right?
Oh, yeah, with the Chris Evans-ness. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, wow, and he's doing this now.
Yeah.
Did this go to the cinema, did you know?
Yeah, well, it did, yes, in a COVID-affected world. But it's, and it also went to Warner Brothers to, I think, Warner Brothers film. It's just so bad.
Is it boring?
It's boring. It's just not funny. Nothing's funny about it. And
I wonder to myself,
even the comedy aimed at kids, I just think my daughter never laughed either.
Well, that's it. You got Tom and Jerry, which is clearly for kids, but not kids your daughter's age, like literally kids my age, because not kids, because we know what they are.
Well, it's doing the Robert Who Framed Roger Rabbit thing where the cartoons interact. Like
that's different. I thought it was just a straight up cartoon.
No, it's a hand.
Also, it's live action / cartoon.
Yep.
Oh, and it blows.
Yep.
Is it not?
All the animals in it are cartoons. Everyone else is normal.
Oh. Yeah, that's fraught with danger if it's not Roger Rabbit.
It just doesn't work.
Doesn't work?
It's not funny. Michael Peña's in here again, slumming it again. His career is in fucking free fall. If not for Ant-Man, his character in that, he would not have made even a remotely good film in the last 6 or 7 years.
Oh, man. It's been a while since End of Watch. Yeah, okay. Fair to say. All right.
Chloe Grace Moretz, she's pretty. That's about it.
Okay.
She looks awkward. She looks like she's uncomfortable in this movie. Like even the following of where they're meant to be looks really kind of second rate.
Really?
Yeah, there's no tennis ball. The tennis ball and the stick wasn't in the right place, clearly.
Oh, that's weird. Okay.
So, shit ass film. Do not bother.
Tom and Jerry, got it. My number 8 is a film that Paul and I almost reviewed for the show and then we found something better. It's called The Little Things.
Exactly where it would be on my list too. Okay, good. Number 8.
Everyone, this is the latest Denzel Washington film.
Denzel.
He's playing a county deputy sheriff called Joe Deacon, and he's sent to Los Angeles for what should have been a quick evidence-gathering assignment. Instead, he becomes embroiled in this search for a serial killer who's terrorizing the city. The leader of the hunt is LA Sheriff Department Sergeant Jim Baxter, played by Rami Malek.
Two Academy Award winners.
Yes. This is one of the most pronounced cases of miscasting I've seen in some time.
Agreed.
I simply don't buy him as a fed or whatever it is he's doing. He's the suit in the town. And frankly, I don't know if he's doing something with his face or what, but he seems to be googly-eyed gaping at everything someone says. And then he's trying to be, I don't want to be an asshole here, but he's trying to be maybe menacing or something. I know. But it's so cliched, the things he's doing, except it's not cliched because he's Rami Malek and no one really looks like him. But what is he doing with his face? This thing moves incredibly slow.
Oh.
37 minutes in, I don't know what Denzel's deal is. It's weird. All the moments that seem to happen in the show, they land very softly. Again, slow. And it's not me. I don't know what it is. But Denzel is not convincing in this film.
He's not good in this movie.
He's not good in this movie.
He's sleepwalking his way through it. Jared Leto bobs up as the prime suspect.
Which I didn't even recognize. So that guy is like, that actor looks like Jared Leto, but it's not him. And it actually was him. But
the poor approximation of Jared Leto, this guy.
It's weird. And it's like, there's plot beats in this thing where I'm like, don't these cops have radios? Because a lot of these problems would be solved if one of you got on the horn.
Okay, here we go again. You know it's set like back in the 90s,
is
right?
It?
Yes.
So no one had a mobile phone?
The story goes, John Lee Hancock, I think, directed this movie.
Right.
He wrote it in the early 90s. He wrote this before Seven even came out, which is why it has this real Seven vibe.
Well, trying to have a Seven vibe.
Shit-ass, you know, yeah. It's like a three vibe going for a Seven.
That was pretty good. okay. Well, that changes it a little bit, but not enough. Because the actual characters do stupid things. There's a scene where Rami Malek is taunted by Jared Leto, the evil guy's character, and says, "You got to dig here. You got to dig, you know, in these spots and stuff, right?"
Yeah, so Rami Malek, not to spoil too much.
Okay, but Rami Malek is digging, turning his back on the bad guy, and I'm like, dude, why don't you make him fucking dig? You know, it's just dumb shit goes on. This is a really, really pronounced miss. I had not heard of it until, like, Paul was telling me about it.
Yep.
But there's probably, if you haven't heard of it, there's a reason. It's because it blows.
Well, it did, again, came out theatrically where it was safe to do so under COVID and otherwise was released a video on demand. And from what I hear, just about no one likes this movie. This has been widely panned, and it's an inferior 7. Again, we've explained why, but it's just boring unengaging, well, and all the performances are. I think Jared Leto's okay in his performance. He's appropriately weird and creepy, but I think the other two are particularly Malik. Malik is terrible in this movie.
Really bad.
And Denzel Washington is sleepwalking his way through it.
He doesn't look. I would say that he's a little charming. He's got a little bit of that Denzel charm left.
Not the way it was.
That's me trying to reach and find something in this movie that isn't shit, and I came up short. So yeah, The Little Things is a piece of crap. Do not watch it.
And this is exactly where it was on my list until I checked with Wayne, because I knew he had seen it, and I wanted to make sure I wasn't stealing his thunder at all. And so the film I've shopped in for The Little Things,
bring it,
at my number 8 is, unfortunately, the sad, sad indictment, the final nail in the coffin that is Neil Marshall's career.
Oh, really? What?
The man who directed Hellboy, the new version of Hellboy, which everyone fucking hated.
I know.
And he's been consigned now to do this straight-to-video film. But before that, he's directed two of my favorite horror films of all time, in my top 30 horror films of all time.
What?
The Descent.
That it's okay.
And Dog Soldiers.
Really?
And an okay film called Doomsday, which is kind of like a female Mad Max kind of rip-off type thing.
Okay.
Yeah, so he was a massive favorite of mine. He did a whole bunch of Game of Thrones episodes.
Oh, really?
Including the Battle of Blackwater episode.
He did that one.
Yeah, so he's got chops. But anyway, then he did Hellboy, and it's clearly shot his fucking confidence.
No, that was a piece of shit.
Because now, but actually, there's an explanation behind this. So this is a period set.
What is it called?
The Reckoning.
The Reckoning.
I hadn't mentioned that, thank you.
Yeah.
And it's set back around during the time of the Great Plague.
Okay.
And this impossibly beautiful woman.
Right.
And Charlotte Kirk in real life.
Mm-hmm.
Her husband basically contracts the plague in the first scenes of the film.
Yep.
And kills himself rather than risk infecting her or their baby daughter.
Wow, right? Noble.
Meanwhile, the asshole in the nearby town whose land they're renting off.
Oh, she's very nice.
Yeah, sees his chance, right? And goes to try and woo her / you know.
Hit that.
Basically. And when she rejects him, he starts a rumor that she's a witch that killed her husband. And so she gets set upon as being a witch by Sean Pertwee.
Mm-hmm.
He's the head inquisitor. And she's tortured mentally and physically.
Bloody
through
hell.
The whole fucking second act of this movie. In fact, half of this film is her being tortured.
God.
And it's mind-numbingly boring, right? And the film plays with this idea that really she does have some covenant with the devil. Not like knowingly, but the torture is kind of pushing her to this place where she'll accept the devil or whatever into her. Like she keeps seeing, because he's a horror director, keeps seeing these flashes of jump scares of this creature
wandering
out of the darkness. Amounts to nothing. Fucking nothing. I was like, this film has to end with her going this complete demon-fueled rampage and tearing everyone to pieces, right?
How does it?
And then maybe I'll be okay with it. I won't spoil it, except say it doesn't end that way. It doesn't go in the direction it promises. It's a waste of fucking time. It's 110 minutes long. And the only reason that Neil Marshall made this movie is because he hooked up with Charlotte Kirk in real life.
And he's giving her a role.
And he's given her the top billing in his film, which they wrote together. And he's the only one that... Meanwhile, she almost brought down Warner Brothers all by herself.
Why? How?
Because, like...
Did she...
There's this long and sordid tale, right?
Is there a hashtag MeToo thing going on?
A little bit. And clearly there's some really bad... I'm not having a go at her here.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, arguably she's been brave enough to speak out. But in this, she was clearly playing, like, Warner Brothers off, saying, if you don't give me lead roles, I'm going to the press.
What?
So she was unfortunately treated really, really badly, but then threatened them in a way. And it's actually brought the head of Warner Brothers unstuck. I can't remember the name.
Well, sorry, during this film, she was treated poorly?
This film. This is previous film. This is now the only gig she can get is to hook up with a much older director who, I'm sorry, Neil Marshall, you aren't no looker. You ain't no looker.
Really?
And she clearly knows where her bread is buttered.
Well, she is beautiful. You're right. I just looked her up while you were talking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's really sad to see Neil Marshall star fall so far.
It's like that thing. It's what Quentin Tarantino says, that he's only going to do 10 films or whatever. He says that everyone jumps the shark, you know, and everyone De Palmas. So there you are.
Well, nice one. We'll see whether QT keeps to that in due course.
We'll see. We'll see. Okay. My number seven, I took this opportunity to watch films and catch up on a few Clune films missed. I know. So this one is The American. Have you seen The American, Paul?
Quiet American?
No, The American.
No, I don't know.
George Clooney plays an assassin, okay, and he has this job in Sweden, and it ends more harshly than expected, and so he vows to basically do one last assignment, and it's going to be his last kill, and it's in the Italian...
I haven't heard this story before.
I know. He reports to the Italian countryside, where he holds up in this small town, and he relishes being away from all the death and stuff for a spell, and it's about this sort of, like, a weapon that's being constructed, and he surprises himself by seeking out the friendship of a local priest, and he pursues a romance with a local woman named Clara. But this film is a victim of bad marketing. Because if you look at the trailer and you look at the stuff that surrounds this film, it's George Clooney in a suit playing a spy or an assassin. And I'm like, sweet.
James Bond!
That's right! I'm like, Clune Bond, right? Now, the thing is, this isn't actually a bad film, okay?
Okay.
What it is a slow, slow burn film, and it's done that way on purpose. So as an action thriller, it's a 0 out of 10, because it's not an action thriller.
Yeah, okay.
But
the trailer has you believe it's an action thriller?
Sort of. There's a lot of him climbing steps and running and that sort of thing. And it's...
Late for a Train.
It could have been like, yes, suave and late for a train is what it could have been called. But
suavely.
Suavely, exactly. Just cool and, you know, there's not a lot of backstory involved here as well. You just get straight in and you see that he's sort of this dude. And there's at the very beginning, you see what a cold professional he is, because he's kind of with this woman and it's this beautiful woman and they're having a great time and stuff. And all of a sudden he realizes, oh shit, I'm in a compromised position. She's completely innocent, but he kills her. Like, she just walks over there and he goes, bang, and you're, holy shit. And it's like, she had nothing to do with anything. She just couldn't be left alive.
Yep.
So it's that kind of shit. So not a bad story, but if you walk in expecting anything like action, you're going to be sorely disappointed. It's okay. It's okay.
All right, so we're at the okay for you.
Yeah.
But not quite okay for me with my number seven. Thank you for yours.
Bring it.
This is one I went to the cinemas to see, and I didn't hold a lot of hope out for it because it had been through, if not a lot of reshoots, it had been delayed and delayed, not necessarily because of COVID. It was being delayed before COVID even took place.
Mm.
But it's directed by Doug Liman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's called Chaos Walking.
What's this one? Wait, I think I know of this one. Either we talked about it or something.
Yeah, it's based on a YA couple of novels, two or three novels, I forget. Mm. And it basically follows a planet where, well, there's only men. Because men's thoughts, they've gone to a different planet, basically, whatever reason, to colonize another planet.
Only dudes.
No, they went with women, but then there was this great sort of cataclysm where the women all got a disease and died out. But the disease, rather than killing the men, it means their thoughts are expressed and even shown to everyone around them.
Oh my God, that sounds like hell.
It does, doesn't it? Right? And
yeah.
So it follows Tom Holland. He is...
Ah, that's right, Tom Holland.
Yeah, he's the adopted son of a couple of guys who were out working on a farm. So it's a very, you know...
There's no women.
No. Well, not to start with, but then Daisy Ridley and her shipmates are coming to this. The next wave of colonists come to the planet, or at least the scouts for the next wave.
Yeah.
Their ship encounters a problem and crashes, and she's the only survivor. Right, so now a woman...
One chick.
Yeah, is introduced into this environment. Tom Holland comes across her first, sets off this series of events where they end up going on the run.
Really?
So it's this YA dystopian sci-fi.
Okay, so it's not a situation where all the dudes on the planet are trying to hit that, is it?
Well, there's certainly some interest. And some of the fun in the film comes from him trying to, you know, he's like, it's a girl. Oh my God, it's a girl. Imagine what it'd be like to kiss her. And she'll snap around, look at him. He's like, oh my God, don't think like that. That okay. kind of stuff. But it's played very, again, YA, very PG-13.
Okay, so it's not what would, probably happen.
Yes, exactly. So Mads Mikkelsen is the leader of the group of men, and he certainly seems to be, at least to begin with, for the first part of the film, because you know he ain't going to stay good for long.
Of course not, it's Mads.
Yeah, he eventually leads the chase after them because he really has a reason to get. I don't want to say too much more because what little interest there is in this film is in what's going on. And the problem is anyone with half a brain will pick it within half the film. You'll know exactly what's happened and how it's. And maybe not even that long. Probably by the end of the first act, I'm like, oh, well, this, then that, then this, then that. Pretty much I was right to a T. So it was boring. After the initial enjoyment of the, you know, how do we watch what we think and, you know, his mental techniques to try and get around that faded. it's just annoying.
Yeah, it's sort of like, because Doug Liman does one good one, one shit one, one good one, then a couple shit ones.
Yeah, this is definitely a shit one. This is a real disappointment, and the studio really tinkered with it, and you can tell.
Oh, really?
It just doesn't, and the ending is such a wet fart of an ending. It's like, eh, that's it.
God.
Wow.
And this is like Tom Holland, who's, you would say, is at the, you know, with, you know, after the Spider-Man movies, he's at the top of his game. Doug Liman is a celebrated director. Daisy Ridley, Star Wars.
Yep. I would suggest this was shot, it may even have been shot before Rise of Skywalker and maybe before Far From Home. Yeah,
that happens a lot. That happens a lot.
But I could be wrong on that. So
I wonder if Daisy Ridley will go the Luke Skywalker curse or the Skywalker curse, like the Hayden
Christensen. I think she's definitely a better actor than Mark Hamill ever was.
Yeah, sure.
Mark Hamill's voice acting obviously is a real treat, but his on-camera performance
is he was young back then, you know. But yeah, fair enough. Okay. Wow. Chaos Walking. I have heard of this one, but didn't know it was a bag of ass.
Do not recommend you see it, anyone see it at all.
Word. My number six is the second of my Clunefest, and it is Syriana. Did you ever see Syriana?
Yeah, I did, but I saw it such a long time ago, I barely remember it.
I actually was attracted to it because I read all the critic reviews for it. This was critically acclaimed.
Yeah, it was. Okay? I think it was nominated for Best Picture.
Yes, it was, and George Clooney's fat in it. So you know that means Academy Award, mate. if you get fat on purpose, and you're famous already, and you're a good-looking man.
Really thin, Academy Award.
Exactly. One way or the other.
Really fat.
That's right.
Academy Award winning.
If you either eat or starve,
yep,
you're on your way, mate. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a thriller of like, it's about corruption, and it's one. It was.
I have a question though. I must interrupt you to ask.
Please.
How come Michael Madsen hasn't been nominated more
times?
He was
always fat.
But he got fatter.
Yeah, but he's already fat. Right. Like, if he, and he's also, you know, he's Michael Madsen. So. there was a slew of movies around the time this film came out, like Babel and stuff like that.
Yeah, Babel, I remember more.
Yeah, and then what it does is it's actually four stories that by the end of the film entwine into one story. And I will
tell
you,
it's all Pulp Fiction's fault.
Yeah, you're right. You probably are right, actually. And this one is it's really about oil. This whole film is about oil and the way things that the CIA do, you know, operate in like the Middle East and so on like that. And it's a complex character. You know, sordid history. There's Matt Damon in it and, you know, Christopher Plummer. And I'll tell you this, I didn't get it. I'll tell you straight up.
I don't remember it.
I'm not a smart man, okay? I was sitting there going, I'm finding this very difficult to follow. I'm not a smart man. And I was like going, ah. Oh. And I actually found it a bit fucking boring. I'm sorry. It was bad. Like, it was slightly better than The American because the performances were all excellent.
Right. I suppose they're all being clue.
Yes, but I all had a problem with actually following it. So Syriana, someone who's a critic or an Academy Award person will go, you fucking bore. And I am a bore. But you know what? I had a real problem with it. I was like, this is some bull. I don't get it.
And if you are listening to Rotten Tomatoes, please ignore this episode and allow us to become certified.
Well, I will add color to your reviews.
I should have mentioned in my application Wayne's Asian.
That's right. Thank color. Yep. Yellow. All right. That's it. Syriana, my number six.
Yeah, interesting that you had that sort of reaction to it. I've got coming up on my list fairly shortly some of the Academy Award nominees for this year. And so I kind of wanted to give a little bit of an indication on that front.
Okay, nice.
But yeah, all right, well. My number six is where I start to recommend.
Good.
But I only recommend here to people who are open-minded enough. Because on paper, this film looks like or sounds like ass. What so I'm just going to tell you what it is, and then I'm going to try and sell it.
Go on, go on.
Okay? Because I'm in, as I said, I'm three-starring here now.
All right.
This film is called Benny Loves You.
Okay.
Right? And it basically follows, it's a low-budget British flick.
That's fine.
Directed by, and starring, and written by, and who does most of the CG effects in it, Carl Holt. So it's almost a one-man show.
All right.
And it's pretty fucking funny.
Betty loves you.
Benny.
Benny loves you.
And here is the byline. Hell hath no fury like a teddy scorned.
All right.
This is a film.
Tell me what it's about.
Where a middle, he's 37. I think he's 36. 36-year-old man.
Dude, yep.
He's sort of down on his luck in life when in a very early scene and while trying to celebrate his 36th birthday, his parents are both tragically killed in an accident, which I won't reveal how.
You're laughing for some reason. Go on.
I know, it sounds awful, but this whole film was played like this.
Oh, so is it a comedy?
It's a comedy horror.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Oh, okay. I see what's going on here.
And
go on.
In a moment of sort of, he pulls Benny, this teddy he had, his only friend when he was a kid, because he was a loser kid, out. And anyway, Benny comes to life.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And in better graphics than you would imagine, I have to say.
Sure.
And just goes around the whole time saying, Benny loves you. And play with me.
Okay.
And anyone he shows affection to or any interest in other than Benny, Benny kills.
What the fuck? How do you come across this shit?
It is. The teddy is really cute.
All right.
And yet goes and does some really ridiculously horrendous things. And there's some gore in here, not, you know, ridiculous amounts, but there's one or two scenes which are really over the top in terms of gore. But it's just charming, this movie. And I laughed so much during this film. The way Benny sort of emotes just by using the same sort of voice, it's over, and then sort of cock its head to one side or do whatever.
Is it animated?
Well, yeah, Benny's kind of animated, but there's some practical effects of just moving him around. Okay. And it's like a puppet sort of type of stuff.
That's what I think
they've moved away the things.
Mm.
It's just fun, this movie.
Benny loves you.
I'll give you two examples of the vein of humor and see whether it sells you. He's got a competitor at his job. He's like a marketer, right?
Yep.
At work. And he's got a competitor at his job named Richard something. And he's like, no, it's not Richard. It's Richard.
Richard.
Right.
Yep.
And he's a complete douche. And so that makes you laugh. Thing. Yep.
Although, you know, there's a famous watchmaker called Richard Millet, but it's spelled Richard. I think it's actually a way, but I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
And then another bit is later in the film when the main character and the surviving characters are gearing up to fight back against Benny. There's like a montage, which is then mirrored in a montage of Benny getting ready to go and take all them on.
Okay.
Like putting a headband on.
No, I get that. You're telling me this, right? And I'm going, oh my God, it's a poor film. But the fact that you're championing it means something because you're quick to shit on the bad horrors as well.
Yeah, I am.
So I don't
apologize for shit horrors.
This must have something to it. Benny loves you. If anyone's game out there and likes horror movies, so not me.
I would recommend.
Really?
Give it a bash just to see whether or not you get some laughs out of it. Now, I did watch it, most of it, the first half of it, when I was pretty trashed.
Ah!
But I did come back to the last half an hour and rewatch 10 minutes of that just in case, which I had seen it or hadn't fallen asleep. And I saved it for when I was completely sober and still got quite a few titters out of the last half an hour.
So. No, this is an interesting choice because, like I said, you're not one to defend it if it's shit, especially if it's a horror. Nice one.
Brad from the Cinema Guys has also seen it, and he rated it even higher than I did. He rated it 3.5 stars. So there you go. Two indie podcasters both recommending this one.
For a horror, that's like... It's like 10 stars. okay. My number 5 is a Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt movie called 50-50.
Yep, seen this one.
You've seen this one? This is great, everyone. It's got those two as well as Anna Kendrick, Bryce Dallas Howard, and it's about Joseph Gordon-Levitt. He's a 27-year-old like public radio journalist in Seattle. He's got his girlfriend, Bryce Dallas Howard, still hot then, and she... And she,
I wasn't sure whether to play she wearing heels running around through the jungle joke.
No. This is a while ago. I don't know the actual date of this movie, but it's quite a while ago.
It's at least 10 years.
At least 10 years ago, right? So Joseph Gordon-Levitt gets this like a malignant form of cancer. And it's a spine type cancer. And he sees that the survival rate for it is 50-50. Hence the movie title. Now, this is a film that should be mawkish and sort of serious and horrible, but it's actually kind of amazing, okay? This is such a...
That's your 5.
This is my 5, bro.
Very glowing term, sir.
Dude, I love it. It's such a difficult balance to strike, but I found myself laughing all the way through this movie about cancer, and it's... I know, and the whole thing is absurd and honest. Like, all of the people who have to deal with it in his life deal with the news and his condition really badly, just like real life.
Mm-hmm.
And it stays enjoyable and somehow actually fun, while making the relationships very real and relatable. I like that, like, these guys are... I like films where guys try to get laid, but they aren't portrayed as dicks as a result of doing that. Now, for example...
Something Wayne can only hope for.
Exactly. I mean, it's... Trust me, I have no experience with that. But they're in a... like, they actually... You're an asshole. You're an asshole, okay? but they actually use the cancer condition to pick up chicks, if you can imagine such a thing, right? And I'm like, how are they going to do that?
Wayne was really desperately writing notes. I'm bald.
That's what they did. He's walking in and he's got a beanie on and they're like, you know, they're trying to get women and none of them are talking to him. So he's like, let's try and play with this angle. Let's try and bring it up early. He takes off his things. Oh my God, you're so bald. It's like, yeah, it's just cancer. Oh my God. And then she's like, can I touch your head? By the way, I get that a lot. Can I touch your head?
You're like, yes, but it's a 2-for-1 package.
But as I say this, though, this was written based on the writer's own experience, who actually was also ill and so on. And because the characters are flawed and well put together, there's actually a great scene where all the patients, cancer patients, eat pot brownies and get high together. It's actually done really well. Do you see why?
Do you see why
maybe this worked for me?
The only shock for me is this is at 5.
Oh, I love this.
There's some really strong films from 4 through 1.
Oh... Yes, I will say that. Okay. But this is, I don't know. I think it just obviously struck a chord with me. Yeah, 50-50, worth a shot. And critically acclaimed, I'm told.
I'm told by the internet.
By the internet, yes.
Well, my number five is a film which is critically acclaimed,
mm-hmm.
both by the internet and all the awards at the moment as we wade our way through awards season coming up on the Academy Awards, which unfortunately we won't have a chance to do our predictions for this year
because
we'll have to be right now, given this is the last episode that will drop before the Academy Awards.
Okay.
But we're not going to do that.
No,
so, this is Judas and the Black Messiah.
Ah, I've heard some talk of this. Bring it up. What is it about?
This is a second feature film for a guy named Shaka King, mm-hmm. and it basically follows the true story, based on a true story, of Fred Hampton, who was the deputy chairman of the National Black Panther Party in 1960 or the late 1960s,
mm-hmm.
and who was effectively, he was assassinated by order of the FBI.
Really?
And it follows Lakeith Stanfield is a guy who is basically co-opted to go in there and be an informant.
I love Lakeith Stanfield, and I don't know why, but I always like his shit.
He's good in the film, and is arguably the lead, but it's Daniel Kaluuya as Fred, who really steals the show there.
Yeah.
They recreate a couple of speeches that he gave, and boy, does he sell these speeches.
Nails it, yeah.
Like, I'm watching something that's taking place in history 50-plus years ago,
yeah.
You know, as a middle-class white person, and I'm getting, like, enthused, like, fuck yeah, this is unbelievable. Like,
really?
Of course, the film presents it this way. The authorities
but it works.
Are complete cunts in this film. And clearly, there's evidence to suggest this is all true. I went and read about it afterwards. And there's not a lot going on in this film that's exaggerated or made up.
So it's known that the FBI ordered the assassination?
Yeah, they released records after a number of years where it basically confirmed that, you know, Hoover and the like were behind this. And
really?
The evidence is there's no way that it was anything other than he was murdered because he was drugged. In effect, before and they still shot him in the head when he laid in his bed.
Bloody hell!
So that's obviously a big spoiler, but the byline here says the story of Fred Hampton, who was assassinated. So
it's well known, it's
historical fact, and I was pretty sure he would die without knowing the story before.
Yeah,
but it's how you get to that point and the impact along the way. It probably would have been better if it was a little tighter. This is not it's 125 minutes, plays a little long. I think had it been tightened up in the second act. By 10 or 15 minutes, it would have been a much better film.
Mm.
But it really does end on a powerful note. So it's a definitely recommend. Yeah, and the performances are good.
Yeah.
But I just think it just takes too long to make it.
Takes
point.
Too long?
Yeah.
I've heard actually quite a bit about this film and a lot of people actually digging it. Judas and the
Apparently
Black Messiah.
Is a lock for Best Supporting Actor.
Is that so? Mm. Well, the Oscars will be fun this year, won't it? Will anyone turn? Oh, actually, was last year as much the same? Were Oscars, there was like.
No, the Oscars.
Had it happened?
No,
before?
It happened before. So usually in middle of February, late February.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Cool. Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yeah, I'll so check well, it worth, out. Well worth checking out and watching as one of these films that you, from the Best Picture nominees, that you might want to have a look at.
Real good. Okay. My number four is a film called The Good Liar, which I've had my eye on for some time.
So I haven't heard this one.
Yeah, get this. It's Sir Ian McKellen.
Mm-hmm.
And Helen Mirren.
Oh, I have seen the poster for this.
Right. So this is essentially a confidence man trickster type movie, which I thought was like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, except it was Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren. Now, this is about career con artist Roy Courtney, played by Ian McKellen, and he meets Helen Mirren online through an elderly person dating site, and he can't believe his luck because...
You must have met a few Helen Mirrens, Wayne.
If only. So, yeah, he meets her. He finds out she's well-to-do, quite rich. And as she opens her life and her home to him, he's surprised to find himself caring about her. And it turns what should be a cut-and-dry swindle into a treacherous tightrope walk. This movie is surprisingly vicious. It is not what you think it is.
Okay, I heard some really average reviews for this.
I loved it, man. This is like, I mean, first of all, I like watching elderly folk interact and remain relevant in the world. Gives me hope if I ever end up, you know, making it to be an old man. I would like to be still out in the world and not conning women, but like just, you know, relevant, out, doing shit, wearing suits, things like that, right? So
recording the 40th year of a podcast.
That's right. But this is no jaunty tale of old folks being tricksters. This is dark as hell. Okay. And it turns out like...
You've caught my attention, sir.
Dude, there's scenes in here where this nice, kindly old... Because he's like 80 or something, right? And like, you know, one of the cons that he pulls, like the guy sort of catches up with him and follows him and says, hey, you know, that thing basically, he calls him out and he's in a train station and they're talking and stuff. And out of the blue, Ian McKellen stabs him in the eye and throws him in front of a train. I'm like, whoa! And you don't see it coming. It's like, what the fuck? And then when the story finally gets to, like, its conclusion, you see kind of how dark it does actually go.
Don't spoil it.
I won't. Yeah. I won't. But it's, yeah, The Good Lad. I don't know if you would like it. Having told you that, I think you'd now go, yeah, shit. But
he loves you.
Right, exactly. There you go. There you go. So, but yeah, The Good Lad, I do recommend it. So there you are.
All right, cool. My number four is, you know how we a while ago discussed what was the most successful, the biggest revenue-taking film of last year?
Yeah.
We bandied back whether or not it was Bad Boys for Life or Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
It wasn't either of those. It was The 800, a Chinese film.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
which follows back before the start of World War II, the Japanese invasion of China, and 800 Chinese soldiers basically stop in the middle of Shanghai and occupy this big warehouse as the final line in the advancing Japanese army. Except there's some weird, I didn't really understand the politics of this, because it's, if it's true, and they show you the building at the very end of the film, which is being obviously kept in preserved, the same condition, preserved as a monument, but just across the river is a kind of this zone where a whole bunch of English soldiers are holding, and the Japanese are obviously not allowed to go over there. Like, that's out of bounds.
So sorry, is it set in Shanghai?
Shanghai, yeah.
And is it a Chinese movie?
Yeah.
And
it's set in 1937.
And the soldiers are Chinese soldiers or Japanese? Yeah,
Chinese soldiers holding against the advancing Japanese army.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And the good thing about this film is the battle sequences are incredible. They hold for 4 days. It's basically a battle a day, right? So there's four of these through the film. It's pretty long. It's 147 minutes.
Whoa.
The problem with the film is that...
it's too long?
Well, in between they try and flesh out. And two or three of the characters do get fleshed out enough that you come to care about them and recognize them and the like. And really can follow them quite readily in the battle. But some of the others, like, they kind of bob up and disappear for 45 minutes and bob up again, and you're meant to remember who they are.
Mm.
But they're all wearing the same bloody uniforms. The color palette's all been washed out. So it's just really... it's, in fact, the color palettes are worse than this movie.
And who I'm Asian, so I can make this joke. They're all Asian.
I've watched lots of movies. I know what you're saying. I know. And it is harder, I will acknowledge. I think, but it's hard. Even, like, I'll go back to Hamburger Hill, right? A Vietnam film.
Yeah.
My biggest complaint of that film is I can't fucking tell who's who.
Yes. It's like, right? Transformers as well. Yes.
Yeah. Because, it is, there's some glorious shots, and Guan Hu directed this film. Don't know who he is.
Guan Hu? sorry.
But it's the visual flair on this film. Had they just not over-color corrected to try and represent the times, I don't know. It's really
Is it flat, sort of like dank color?
It's
or is
greeny,
it not?
Gray,
okay.
And then very red on the red lights on the other side of the river. So it's this weird washed out sort of hue. And there's clearly characters who I'm meant to know who they are if I was of Chinese heritage. Like, there's some woman who dresses as a man who's running some kind of brothel. They never show her face properly until the very end of the film for like one shot. Like, well, clearly I'm meant to know who that is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't.
Yeah.
Right. And the people who are viewing this and watching the courage and the honor of these men who are staying behind to die, most of them, you know, a few try and escape and whatever else, but most volunteer to hang back. And
wow. So it's like a suicide mission.
A little bit like the Alamo. We can't stand here. We're going to get overrun. They've got superior everything. We've just got a bunch of conscripts, really, and some good soldiers amongst them.
Yeah. Okay. And you like it?
Yeah, I did. I think it was, I mean, it's very clearly Chinese propaganda.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Like, you're meant to be rah, 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 China. But I guess if we, and we have got some stories like this, most nations do, of, you know, valiant heroes standing and dying for their country.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Do you want to have a poke at what you would score this?
Yeah, I go high three, low 3.5. So 67, 68.
Not bad for a movie that long, which, you know, and that sort of thing. Yeah, that's all right. Nice work.
Thank you.
All right. My number three, from one nationalistic movie to kind of another. This is an Aussie film.
Okay.
It's called The Dry.
Oh, I haven't seen this yet.
All right. So I didn't expect to care. Mm-hmm. About this film, but I had...
well, it's an Aussie film, so straight away that puts you off.
Well, here's the thing, though, folks, and let's not shit on me, every other Aussie. Australia doesn't make that many films. Like, there's very few Australian films that are celebrated.
You missed the word in there. Good.
Good. Okay, good. I wasn't going to say that, right? So, yeah, as a result, not many of them are good, okay? So, fine. This is about Eric Banner, because it's an Aussie movie, so you want to put Eric Banner in it, right? And he plays a federal police. I'm not sure if we're called agents over here, but he's a fed. And he returns to his hometown. No,
federal police officer, I think.
Yeah, they're not called agents, are they? No, okay. So he's referring to his hometown, which is this regional town in, I'm guessing, I don't know, Victoria, New South Wales. Could be somewhere. Not sure. Anyway, point is that this town, it's called Kiawara. I'm not sure where that is, everyone. But it's fucking bumfuck Idaho, okay? It's miles away, right? And this is a town which hasn't had rainfall in a year. So it's totally dry and it looks like it, okay? And he goes back to attend the funeral of his childhood friend, Luke, who allegedly killed his wife and his child and himself, sparing his baby that was in the cot. pretty dark stuff, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, he goes back there, and when he gets there, it's like the whole town, it's a small town, and they all remember him, and he's got this history where he was under he was suspected to have had something to do with the death of this girl when he was a youngster. And it was never solved, and it was understood that she sort of, like, you know, so maybe killed herself.
He's frowned upon.
He's frowned upon, but he's a federal policeman now, and he's actually, like, you know, celebrated federal policeman. So he gets back there, and probably, if you grew up in Australia, it's kind of nice. We all get a bit sentimental when we see the Australian landscape in a movie because you never see it in Hollywood films and stuff like that. So it's a bit, it's simply not a landscape that you often see on the screen. So I liked that part of it, but I didn't expect the film to be so engaging. Now, it's not exactly a mile a minute kind of, you know, it's like, it's not fast, but it's not slow either. I absolutely liked this film and
liked it. You had some stronger words for films lower on your list.
Okay, I really liked it.
Okay.
I did really like it because, and you know, it's the overall country feel that for some reason doesn't make it tedious. I'll give you a little secret, folks. I hate the fucking country.
I'm about to say, hang on a second. Who the fuck are you?
Yeah.
And give Wayne back.
Exactly. I hate the fucking country. I hate going to little regional towns. I hate little fucking bullshit fucking little towns and shit like that. I only like cities, okay? I'll just tell you. All right? I've even been to different countries.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I went to fucking... I went to the Napa Valley in California once, right? And I was like, this looks like fucking Margaret River, which is a wine region near in WA. Beautiful. And I was like, fuck it. I was just like, yeah, I'm good for a day here.
I feel like I'm taking Shut crazy up! Pills!
Anyway, but this film here, it actually ends in a way I did not expect. And that's all I will say. Good, yep. But it's really, really great. The Dry, it is worth looking. I think it'd be more interesting to an international listener, actually, because it's like, you don't see much Aussie
it's
shit
on my
like
list,
this.
I'll definitely see it.
Yeah, it's good.
Better or worse than High Ground?
Better.
Okay, right.
Yeah, but High Ground was in the Northern Territory, which is as country as you can get. So,
therefore, Wayne.
So, you know, this.
And it was set as a period.
At least there was cars in
this. So, there wasn't even a car. That's right. All right, then. Well, good. I'm glad you're opening up to different things.
Oh, yeah. I was surprised myself.
My number three is probably my favorite of the Academy Award nominated films this year. Uh-huh. Just because it's extremely heartwarming and so much better than it sounds. It's Minari. It's a Korean language film for the most part, but it's made with American money. It's set in America, set in the early 1980s.
Hmm.
Stephen Yeun.
Oh, yeah.
Is playing a Korean immigrant who was living in LA and they moved.
Oh, I've heard of this one.
They moved to small town Nebraska.
I think we got an
invite. Arkansas, sorry.
Yeah, we got an invite to this, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah,
we missed it though, yeah.
But now I've got it. And takes his family along with him. So they're Korean Americans. And, you know, I was expecting this to be a racist story, like a story about how badly they're treated by the locals and they're trying to fit in. None of that.
Really?
Yeah, there's a couple of moments which are played very lightly, but generally speaking, the people there in this small town, Arkansas, are very welcoming. And apart from some kids just saying some really, you know, they're not educated.
Yeah.
Like, say some words in your language and I'll tell you when to stop when I recognize a word.
Okay. You know. I've been to Arkansas and it's actually the loveliest people.
There you go.
They're such lovely people. Yep.
So, and it basically follows him trying to set up a farm in this area and trying to do it his way and not following through on what others are telling him to do.
Yeah.
And it's splitting he and his wife apart. So a lot of tension in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, they've got a daughter and a younger son. And the son's like 7 and he's got a heart condition, right? So he has to be very careful and they're trying to keep him be very careful because they're not sure he's going to survive. And then the grandmother comes over from Korea. He brings his mum over to help care for the family because they're not managing, basically.
Okay.
And she's the least grandmotherly person ever.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's I don't want to spoil too much more than that, but it's really heartwarming. There's some legitimately funny bits in it. The characters are all very memorable.
Yeah.
The grandmother's excellent. She's been nominated for a lot of supporting actress awards. And I think Stephen Yeun's been nominated too. He won't win. But but they're all good. And the kid is a standout. He's really, really funny.
Minari is what it's called?
Yeah. Which is a plant that they harvest the Koreans.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Nice one. It's a bit of a low slung choice by you there.
Yeah, a bit outside the box of what I normally, but I really dug it when I watched it. I was, again, it's
that
not,
means it's probably better than, you know, like it's to capture your attention despite it not being your jam.
Yeah.
That tends to speak louder.
Yeah,
I think.
Look, as if I was rating just on a drama scale versus my enjoyment scale, this would have been, you know, 4, 4.5 out of 5. But because dramas
not quite your thing, exactly. That hence it's good though. What's that, number 3? Boom. Very nice.
Yeah, man. All right. Over to you. Your number 2.
My number 2 is a film that I had long heard about but had never seen. It's Gone Baby Gone.
Oh, wow.
I know. I'd never seen this film despite being a Ben Affleck fan and all that sort of thing. Now, I can now
this
see.
This is first film, right?
This is first Before film, and I see why he became like hot property after this. Okay, because this is a long way from Live by Night, right? This is this was him showing Before real promise. Exactly. Now he so it's about he's got his brother Casey Affleck in it.
Casey
Affleck. Casey Affleck. And it's about this kid, 4-year-old Amanda. She disappears from her home, and they're in this Boston town somewhere. And the police make little headway in solving the case. So the girl's aunt hires two private investigators, Casey Affleck and what's her name, Michelle Monaghan. And they go and try and augment the police investigation. Now, what I like about this film is, apart from the fact that Casey Affleck, despite being something of a smaller stature fellow, he does handle his business quite well. Like, he actually doesn't look at all menacing, but he holds his own in a lot of scenes where it could have gone the other way. That's pretty impressive.
Right.
More importantly, though, this film takes you in places I wasn't expecting, and I actually didn't know what the film was about. All I was told was that someone said, at the end of this film, you would actually ask yourself, seriously, what would you have done? What would you have done? Okay? And I'm not going to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, because you should absolutely see this. When I saw it, I was looking at it. I was engaged the whole time. But towards the final act, I felt like it was reveal, 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 reveal. Oh, my God. Like, you know, quandary. Because at the end, you're like, what would you have done here? And I can tell you which way I would have gone, and I won't spoil it by saying it. But Gone Baby Gone, really, really awesome. I'm sure most people who are listening to this have seen it. And it's available, I'm sure, easily
you can
somewhere.
See it everywhere. But I saw it a long time ago. I remember so little about it, other than I liked it at the time.
Yeah, and that's the thing, though. If you look at it again now, and because there's a kid in danger involved and stuff like that, I thought I wouldn't like, you know, because I really don't enjoy that. I just don't enjoy even the suspense of that. I don't know what enjoys like kids being in danger, but like I react very badly to it. I can't be entertained sometimes when it's like that. But this one, absolutely. And it's because Ed Harris plays this really great role as well. So, and Morgan Freeman, of course. So really wicked show. Definitely recommend it. Gone Baby Gone.
All right. So a bit outside your wheelhouse.
Totally. Totally. And I think that's why I liked it so much. That's why it's number two.
Okay. Again, above some things you've really spoken very warmly about.
Yeah.
Now, there is a Facebook listener community scavenger hunt going on as organized by Josh Ragland.
Yes.
I mentioned on the show before. It's too late to join up now if you are at all interested, but most people are sort of halfway and more to be finished by. And some people finish, like Troy Spinner was the first person to finish from Comic Confidential. This is a film I watched because of that, because one of the categories in the scavenger hunt was a film about an interest of yours. And they have to be films you haven't seen before, right? So what am I into that I haven't watched? Because, of course, if you're into something,
yeah, you've already seen it,
right? So I found this film called McFarland, USA.
So is the thing you're interested in
the punctuation?
Punctuation and saying it out loud.
No,
yeah,
it is. It's about running.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it basically follows Kevin Costner. It's based on a true story yet again, and he plays a high school football coach. He's got an anger problem. He loses his shit to a degree, and I can't remember what he does, but he hurts one of his players by throwing a boot or something, smacks him in the head.
How long ago was this movie made?
2015.
Okay.
And so he basically can't get any other job, so he has to move. He and his family down to McFarland, which is a Southern Californian town,
okay,
not far from the border of Mexico. And a lot of the people who live there are Mexicans, and or Mexican-Americans. And he gets a job as a sort of sports teacher and co-coach of the football team.
Yep.
But quickly runs into trouble with the coach there as well, who's played by one of the dudes from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Uh-oh.
And
see where this is going.
Yeah, one of the old dudes. Anyway, and so what he recognizes, though, in this predominantly
Hispanic
culture is that they're all really good runners. They're all super fucking fit.
Really?
And so he decides, even though he's never coached track before, he basically tries to recruit them to be on his track team. So he gets like six of them together. Yeah. And it's this, you know, heartwarming story about these six kids who, apart from the fact they all work super hard and are in the same class, start to come together as a team and start to look out for each other and the town, which had nothing to fucking believe in, starts to rally behind them because they start to do pretty well and they make the state championships. Will they win the state championship?
And it's that kind of movie?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Is there any reason offered for why the town seems to be overall good at running? Is it just
yes,
that, yeah?
Yeah, they're super fit because all they do is work all day long and they in the fields.
So their stamina is massive.
Yeah, and then they run to school and then they run back home afterwards.
Really?
And there's this great line in the film where it's basically like, so do you get paid by the hour? And they went, no, by the field.
Oh, really? So they got to do shit quick?
Yeah.
Ah, that's a thing.
So it's really, Kevin Costner's playing very subdued, apart from when he gets, you know, cranky in a couple of places. But just it clearly implies he's quite racist when he arrives there. But over time, he comes to see the people for what they are rather than what he perceives them to be based on what, you know, his prior knowledge or...
Really? You know, Kevin Costner, people have forgotten about him, but there was a time where Kevin Costner had what I called Michael Douglas syndrome, which is where I would see any of his films because I thought a Michael Douglas film was always good. The Game and this and that. Not so much these days.
No. Right?
But like, you know, and Kevin Costner did a bunch of... Mr. Brooks is a great fucking film.
That's a great sleeper.
Just amazing. Like, and he tends to pick relatively good projects.
This one's directed by Nicky Caro, who just did the live action remake of Mulan. So,
oh, okay.
Not saying that this is a much better film than that.
Okay.
Trust me. So I really enjoy this. Obviously, it's in my wheelhouse. It's about running.
Hmm.
It is long-ish, 128 minutes. So you kind of got to not grind through the film. You know where it's going. You can see it. But the payoff's absolutely worth it. And I won't spoil sort of why, but there's a particular character in there who you really do get become affectionate towards. And when he gets his moment, you're like, yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. That's a good rating. Nice. Okay. We don't do the 10 to 1 thing, do we?
Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Let's just run back through them so people can remember what to avoid and just note where you want to pass things and say recommend.
Cool. Don't watch these films.
Yeah.
Thunder Force, number 10. 9, The Spanish Prisoner. 8, The Little Things. You can watch this if you like slow burners. 7, The American. 6, Syriana. And these ones I would recommend. Number 5, 50-50. 4, The Good Liar. 3, The Dry. 2, Gone Baby Gone. And my number 1... Wait for this, Paul.
Okay, here we go. Yeah.
It's a show...
I should cue something up, shouldn't I?
Yeah, you probably should. It's a show called In and of Itself.
Okay.
Now, this is weird, okay? This is the filmed version of a one-man show, right? Which I think must have either played on or off Broadway in the States, right? In New York, okay? It's a guy named Derek Delgado who's doing a one-man show, and it's just a filming of his show on stage, okay? Big crowd as well, okay? And what he does is he takes the audience, right, through a series of monologues and interactive dialogues live on stage while also using close-up magic to tell his story and make his points. I know.
I can't imagine.
No, I know.
Sitting through this.
No, wait. I'm telling you, all right? The shit he manages to do, first of all, I cried 3 times during this show. I know I'm a bitch, Paul, but wow. I cried 3 times during this thing, okay? The shit he manages to do in this film, I actually don't know how he was able to do it. This is actually an illusionist show, but it's couched as a dramatic monologue type drama.
Oh, so it's a magic show.
No, it turns out to be, I'm telling you, right? This would be, it's not like anything I've ever seen before, man. I'm not anything
Wayne
like this
likes
before.
Now You See Me.
And
now You See Me too.
No, but this is real. The actual audience members. Now, let me tell you something. This would be a perfect date if you could actually attend this show that he's at. Because he does a run, and he does things like he'll tell one audience member to stand up, and they have to identify themselves as things when they walk in, and by taking a card off the wall and stuff like that. And then he'll say like to one audience member, like, "Who's the whatever the poet? Stand up, come over here. This is a book. You have to write what you think the end of the show is going to be, but I'm going to tell you to leave now. All right, and you can come back the next night. Okay?
Oh, sure. I've got no plans.
No,
fuck you. What's his name?
Whatever. The point is Derek, right?
No fucking way.
No. But like I'm telling you, what it does is it does really well is it shows the, because it's a movie format of a live show, it shows you all of the incidences like cut of these people that took the book away and them coming back and reading the story. Bill Gates is in the audience,
right?
So obviously, and they don't harp on that, you just sort of see him like, what the fuck is Bill Gates? Obviously, it was a very celebrated play or one-man show in America. Look, it is a bit self-indulgent because one man...
Really?
No. One-man shows by nature are self-indulgent. Yes. I'll tell you that, okay? And it is most definitely the most arty-farty recommendation I've ever made on this show. But
what
it
year?
Does... This year.
Okay.
Like, it only just dropped, man. And it's actually... look around for it in and of itself. It shows you the reactions of the audience on multiple nights. So it only makes what he's doing even more amazing. Because at the end, there's at least, I don't know, at least 200 people in the audience, right? And each of them picked like one of these little cards identifying themselves, right? And there's hundreds of different choices. And he somehow walks up all the way through and identifies every single, just by looking at them. You're the artist. Oh, you're the accident. And it's amazing. He does it night after night after night. So it is actually one of those shows, but I can't tell how he did it. And some of the things that he does when people come back, it's amazing. You have to see it. You have to see it, okay? Just give it a show. Give it a shot, all right?
I can explain the audience one because they're all plants.
No, they're not all plants. You see these hundreds of... And one of them's Bill Gates, motherfucker.
No, I'm not saying the whole audience is, but I'm saying the people that
he nails everyone in the audience
because they're the ones that he's playing.
200, every single one of them. Right. Everyone's saying that. Are you know what I'm saying?
He goes through the whole audience.
Every single one of them, bro. Okay, so and one of them was Bill Gates. He's not doing this for free, man. I'm telling you, right? So that's why I would say don't. I was gonna say take Pat, you know, watch it with Patsy or something. I don't know. It's a lot of pressure on me for you to take that, but maybe give it a try.
Oh, she's married now, so she can't get away.
But it really is great. Honestly, it is great. But you got, okay, again, open your mind with this one, all right? It's not like anything I've seen. I don't think it's like anything anyone's seen. So,
okay.
Yeah, in and of itself, number one.
Well, I haven't made this gag at all with a, you know, big shout out to Duty and my wife.
well, yeah, you can now do that. Excellent.
I can do that. Hooray. Would definitely hate my number one, but I'll get there in a second as I reveal my 10 through to 10.
Bring it.
Cosmic Sin is exactly what it sounds like. 9, Tom and Jerry. 8, The Reckoning. 7, Chaos Walking. They're all terrible. Chaos Walking, the least terrible of the lot, as you would imagine. 6, Benny Loves You. 5,
makes it way better.
Judas and the Black Messiah. Both well worth watching. 800 is better again. Great war film. A bit hampered by the fact that there's lots of big characters you don't give a shit about that it's trying to explore. 3, Minari. 2, McFarland USA. And my number one, maybe is a surprise to some degree, because... But then isn't a surprise given what it is. It's called Psycho Gorman.
Psycho Gorman. Well, okay.
Yeah.
It's not an Aliens offshoot, is it? Gorman.
No, it's not an Aliens offshoot, but it is. It does feature an alien, and it basically follows two kids, this arguably psychotic little girl and her older brother who is just being beaten both mentally and physically to a pulp by his little sister. They stumble across this object which gives her control over this thing called... They come to call Psycho Gorman, who happens to be this intergalactic alien who has the power to destroy the entire universe with all of his, call them magic space powers, whatever you will.
Is this a B-movie?
Oh, yeah, it's a B-movie, but it's celebrating its beingness. It's kind of really rolling around. Did you ever see Turbo Kid?
No, I know of it, though.
Right, same kind of thing.
Something similar, yeah.
It's really going back to this, and this is why I didn't think I would particularly like it. I'm not a Mighty Morphin's Power Rangers
person. Oh, should I know Turbo Kid? Yeah, I do know Turbo Kid. It's like that. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a Mighty Morphin's Power Ranger person. I was too old for it. Didn't get into it. But it's kind of the same kind of over-the-top kooky costumes or whatever, except this thing that they have control over, he's bad. He's evil. He wants to destroy everything in the universe. Wow. So he's kind of like, give me back this. He's got a great voice. I can't do it justice, but
fair enough.
Give me back the medallion so they may rip you asunder and then tear your parents' heads off and shit down their necks.
That's really? Kind of
thing, you know? And the kid's like, I'm Psycho Gorman. You're hilarious. You know?
This is your number one?
Yeah.
Psycho Gorman. What is it that charmed you about this film?
Like I said.
Yeah, okay.
And then, of course, the guardians of the universe or whatever realize he's escaped from his prison and they come to try and put an end to him. And meanwhile, he's just running rampant through this small town and anyone who he can, he just kills. Generally in a gory way, although it wasn't as gory as I was expecting. The first few kills are really gory and then it kind of fades away after that. They've
run out of budget, yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Believe me, they save the Guar. Do you know that band Guar?
No.
No, where they get really dressed up in these ridiculous over-the-top sort of costumes and and hack each other apart and all really? This kind of shit. It's a lot like that as
Damn.
Well. It's charming. It's really funny in places. Like, I laughed a lot in this movie. And of course, a connection forms between Psycho Gorman and the kids as the film progresses. So it's almost like this My Bodyguard type deal by the end.
Well, this could only be your number one. But hey, I'm intrigued because, you know, number one is a big place to put this.
Yeah, look, none of my films are 4 stars, right? This is 3.5 stars. It doesn't quite know what it's going for. It's only 95 minutes long, but it really commits. It really... At one point, Psycho Gorman turns his big character into this basically large brain.
Right? Oh, God.
He just swings around with his little tentacles pulling it along. The character says, do you think I'll ever get back to being a boy again? And the little girl's like, nah, probably not. And then he never does. He just stays in the brain the entire film.
Okay. I now see where this went and how it went there with you. Okay. Psycho Gorman. I'm sure some of your minions would like this.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's out there in the universe. I'm late to it. But if you haven't seen it and it all sounds interesting, check it out. It's fun. This is what really brought me in. Stephen Katansky directed it. He directed this really great John Carpenter-esque horror film called The Void about 5 years ago. I think this is his next film afterwards. So, yeah, he's 2 for 2 in my book, although I like The Void better than this one.
Okay. Well, it was your number one, so I'm sure it's got its merit.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't recommend it to you. You would fucking
hate
it.
No, sure.
Whereas
sure.
Benny Loves You, I can almost see how you could get the joke in that one.
Totally. Yeah. All right. Not bad. There you are.
There we are. That's our list for today. There's obviously no honorable mentions in the top 10 last. So let's just get right into finishing this one off. It's always a bit longer, these particular episodes, as we mini review 20 films, no less, in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with top level patron and moderator of the Facebook list committee, David Powell, who said 20,000 Days on Earth. Essential viewing for any fans of Nick Cave, but also anyone with an interest in the creative process or getting an insight into one of the greatest, most unwaveringly original songwriters and performers for our time.
20,000
Days on Earth.
Okay. Nice.
Billy Dunham. From the We Watch the Thing podcast, B Dizzle, as we like to call him around these parts, another patron of the show. Thank you, Billy. Ascendant. Certainly the worst movie I've seen this year, if not in all my years.
Sounds like a way thing.
There's a reason this Aussie-made movie only has 23 Letterboxd reviews, 3 when I saw it. It is so not worth anyone's time.
See my previous comment about Aussie films.
It's at the cinemas. It only came out last week or the week before.
Ascendant.
And it's only got 23 reviews on Letterboxd. That is astounding.
That is astounding.
Chris Sutherland. Said The Night Comes for Us, which is one of my favorite films from a couple of years back. It's like The Raid, and I rate them almost on par. So there you go. It's a pretty solid one-sentence review. Jennifer Manson said, first of all, congratulations to Paul and Patsy on the upcoming wedding. Last movie she saw, an indie film, Supernova, with Colin Firth and Stanley Tucci.
Oh, yes.
Topical.
Really?
One word review.
Supernova, fantastic.
Thank you, Jen. Sam Hurley. From Movies and 20Qs podcast, patron to the show, Mortal Kombat 1995. I should have avoided a rewatch and let it live on in my memory as being awesome. The theme song still slaps.
Mortal Kombat. Yeah, that's good shit.
Yeah. Daniel Lowe said Insomnia, truly underrated a Nolan film. Understated compared to others, but a great crime / detective piece.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good film, I agree.
Robert Williams, yep.
Philip Meany said Hunter, a dark movie. And I'm not sure how I feel about it, to be honest. Hard to say anything without spoiling it. 100% agree. I almost put it on this list.
Hunter,
I will
say
it wasn't as good as I hoped it was going to be, though it does redeem itself with a particularly interesting ending, I will say. Darren Clark, Minari, Movie of the Year contender, great performances and terrific score.
Boom.
Blake Jarvis, Nobody, bang average.
Ooh. Hot take.
By now you'll have heard our review of that and know why I was horrified by Blake's review.
Okay.
Brad Hargis from the Cinema Guys podcast mentioned, Benny Loves You is a silly, fun, indie horror movie. There you go.
Okay.
Nick Hemming saw The Courier yesterday and was surprised how funny it is at the start.
I really wanted to watch that.
And then it takes a turn. No spoilers. Cumberbatch is great in it.
Cool.
A real gem.
Nice.
Okay. And last one, Erica San Pedro. Special one, this one, Wayne. I watched Basic Instinct for the first time, since it's such a high recommend on this podcast. Yeah. And then that's all she wrote.
That's it?
And before I got in there, David Powell wrote Your Thoughts. And then she came back with, Sharon Stone's acting was really good. I can't think of any other actress who could replace her in this role. Good portrayal of how a man's brain switches off as all the blood rushes down to their nether region.
Totally.
She clearly was the killer. Spoilers for a film 30 years old. Nick wasn't a very good detective.
Oh, good. I love that she watched that. Nice one. Thank you, Erica.
Thank you for checking that one out. And thank you all for your reviews in the Facebook community. Really do appreciate it. Sorry I couldn't get through them all, but this episode has run long and it's time to wrap this bad boy up.
Rightio.
Wayne, how do people get in touch with us? Let us know their reviews or indeed give us some feedback on the show in general.
Google the Countdown Podcast and see all our shit, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
It is late on a Monday night.
It is really late. I'm so tired.
We're on Twitter at The Countdown PC. You can like and follow the show on Podbean or via the app there, and check out ccradio.com.au for ourselves and some other great Aussie podcasts, including Believe and CC itself, Comic Confidential. And Wayne, we actually don't know what we're doing.
We don't know what we're doing next week because there's a fucking busy week.
There's a wedding in the way.
Exactly. We'll come back to you.
And a honeymoon to be had. So we'll get back to you, let you know what episode 317 is going to be. But you can be guaranteed it won't be recorded on a Monday night and there'll be a lot more energy as a result.
That's right. I won't be falling asleep.
And that is it from us. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
I realized I jumped in when you normally do this bit.
All good. Oh, yeah. I don't know what to say now. We're so fucking late.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Benny loves you.
You can't handle the truth.
That'll do. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.